Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Scott Harris is in this morning with UMW Museums, the James Monroe Museum, and Gary Melcher's home and studio at Belmont. And we are in the... I knew I should have written this down. I was going to say we are in the final days of Scott Harris.
Well,
let's hope
that's
not.
Been rumored for many years, my lad, but not yet.
As soon as I started talking, I thought this was a time you write things,
this is professional radio right here. This is great.
Exactly. Yeah. Scott Harris is getting to retire from part of his job. It's not the final days of Scott Harris. Anyway, good morning. It's good to have you.
This isn't live, is it?
Okay. I know, I'm sure
oh,
it's not.
Yes, it is. Okay. Yes, good morning, Mr. Schubel. How are you?
It is good to have you here. A lot to talk about, even more so than I even expected. One of the things before we get into this, we're going to talk a little bit about you, a little bit about a lot about some of the upcoming programs and things going on. Mm-hmm. But everything going on with the VA 250 programs, I feel like you have prepared me for this, over these years, that I am ready because you immersed me over the years with James Monroe, that I knew very little of James Monroe, and I was more, before I met you, I was more one of those guys that, let's talk Civil War, this other stuff around town, it's okay. But you and Ann Darren and others have kind of gotten me ready for the Virginia 250.
Well, I hope so. I mean, it is a big deal, obviously, for any country to make it to 250 years, or republic especially. I mean, at the time that our ancestors got their musket off the wall and went out to form up with General Washington, no one really knew whether it would work or not. The odds were that it wouldn't, and that the form of government that they would create would endure. Obviously, it's had its challenges. It still has its challenges, but it's certainly I'm talking to you before we went on air. I talked about quotes about Churchill, and Churchill had said about democracy that it's the worst form of government in the world except for all the other forms. So, and I think that we have proven, with warts and all, we've still got a pretty good system if we can live to those ideals, realize everything that's in the Declaration and what the Constitution says, we would be doing very well. It's to make a more perfect union, they said in the Constitution, not a perfect union. So all that's to say that I think it's right and proper for us to spend time to reflect, to educate people, and hopefully to be at least somewhat inspired by what the founders did and what we have a responsibility to carry on.
There's been a few programs already around the air that have been very good, and look forward to it. And I do like whoever. Another Scott was in here a few weeks ago. Scott Walker was in wearing a hat, a Virginia 250 hat that said "America, Made in Virginia," which I thought was just brilliant. And I went and bought the hat the other day.
Oh, wonderful!
But it is. It really is a good time to focus. And I know any site. So many things around here, all across the state, are getting ready and have programs. So it's going to be an interesting time.
Yeah, and for our locality here, July 4th is. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff. There's an exhibit at Gary Melcher's right now. Next month, a museum exhibit an exhibit at the James Monroe Museum will open. Various others, you know, whether it's the Washington Heritage Museums or the Fredericksburg Gary Museum, have already done things and will do more. And Ferry Farm and Kenmore, George Washington Foundation, have their activities. And Ferry Farm, on July 4th, is where all of our museums will collaborate on there's two big initiatives next year. There's the July 4th sort of focused event where we all go to that one site. We'll still do our thing, but there will be an apex event on the 4th of July with all of us at Ferry Farm. And then there's a program called the Slave Dwelling Project that we are engaged with all of our area museums in September of this year, that will be another part of looking at the national story and looking at it from the experiences of the enslaved. And again, we all collaborate. And I think that's one of the great things.
Yeah.
This and other things and then the revolution have given our museums in our community, our region, a chance to really partner. And I think that's the essence of what, you know, our union is supposed to be, is collaboration and cooperation.
I don't ever remember, you've collaborated with a number of programs in different groups around here, but I never remember you working with, with the National Park Service. So to me, that's a first. That's a first.
Well, and I got to give credit to the National Park Service for helping spearhead the discussion on the slave dwelling project, for instance. And of course, our National Park Service sites here on the whole are focused on later period of history than the Revolution.
Sure.
However, the American Revolution 250 in its entirety is supposed to not only focus on the events of the war and the immediate before and after, but the legacy. And so you can take any period of our subsequent history and relate it to what's going on with the Revolution. I think we have a really good spirit of partnering and cooperation that exists among our institutions, which we figured out just before all of us retire. Because just about every one of our area museums is having a leadership change or is going to.
Yeah.
And it's really striking. We did not coordinate that. That just happened.
It is very funny how that is helping. Because and Darren only has a week or two left.
This Friday.
Well, a few days left.
Yeah, she counts it in left. Days, hours. Even.
She's, yes. Yeah, we're not out of the hours with Ann Darren. So yeah, that is one of the things. So yeah, the Virginia 250 is a great thing, and pay attention to it because there are a lot of great events taking place around the area. Scott Harris here with UMW Museums. We'll jump into it and talk about some of the events taking place at the James Monroe Museum and in Belmont and a bunch of other things this morning with Scott on News Talk 1230 WF.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. You can access all episodes of Town Talk online at newstalk1230.net or on your favorite podcast streaming platform. Now, back to your host, Ted Schubel.
Scott Harrison this morning with UMW Museums, the James Monroe Museum, and Belmont, Gary Melcher's home and studio. The last time I was at Belmont was early spring, and it just occurred to me a couple days ago, I think I have probably missed the peak of all the flowers, the spring flowers at Belmont.
Some things, but yeah, but I mean, the peonies are sort of past their height of their glory, but the one thing about the landscaping and the variety of plantings at Gary Melcher's is that there's sort of a succession of of things that come along. They don't all like flare up and then go. And of course, there's such lovely natural areas and the walking trails within the wooded areas.
Yeah, they're wonderful.
So there's always something to enjoy and see there. And roses and other things bloom on their different schedules. You ought to have Brian Barbary in sometime. He's the grounds and garden manager. For Gary Melchers, who's quite conversant in that. He leads the garden strolls that we have every month and in the growing season. So
it's a wonderful place to go. Especially from early spring on. It just the views are great, and like you said, the trails are very underrated there. That before you know it, you can go down and you can get close to the river if you want.
Oh yeah, it does go to the river.
Yeah.
And it's about 2 miles of walking trails within the area that we have. And we've had some wonderful projects by Boy Scouts doing merit badge project, Eagle Scout projects, I should say. To rebuild footbridges across some of the little runs and gullies and things, and we've got nice identification of major trees, and then we have master naturalists volunteers who lead monthly woodland hikes. So it's about the art, it's about the history, but it's very much about the natural as well as the cultivated environment too.
I am going to put it up today or tomorrow. There is a great Facebook posting from the Gary Melcher's home. So it's one of Gary Melcher's. I think it's a Mother's Day kind of kind of painting, and it's just great. And the bookstore there is terrific. And even if you know nothing about Gary Melcher's, to go through that house is to just get an appreciation for his art and just their involvement. He and his wife's involvement in the community.
Oh yeah, and it is a complete story there. It's his artistic arc that the studio and the gallery show, the studio being the workplace, it's as largely as he left it. Corinne Melchers was conscious not only of his artistic role, where he ought to be in art history, but in the promotion of the arts, but she also saw the Belmont Estate that they had purchased back in 1916 as a community resource. And I think that by opening the museum there, and we celebrated 50 years last year of having it be a public museum.
Yeah.
The beeping egg hunts that we do, the program, you're going off on that.
It just
fulfills that vision of hers.
It is. Oh, the beeping eggs is one of the great events, and it's every year the families that come to that are so appreciative, and I just think it's just a wonderful event.
It's well supported. It is something you're right. It's a very popular. People really, the kids get into it, the families get into it, the staff gets into it. Michelle Crowe-Dolby coordinates that along with the preschool palette and the Picturing New Connections programs, but everybody has some degree of hand in helping that come off. It's just one of the things that we do, and we're always looking at different things. We tried several years ago, we started something that's really had a steady growth, Cars and Coffee, which is going to debut for this year tomorrow. In fact, I'm sorry, not tomorrow, this Saturday. Got to remember what day it is. I'm in my final day, so it's hard to remember sometimes. No, coming up, it's from May to October. So this coming week, we're going to see, this weekend, we're going to see that on Saturday, the full glory of some of these great restored automobiles that people bring in and just open up the hood and let people see. And we've got a coffee vendor there. We've had some motorcycle groups starting to take interest too and see some interesting two-wheeled machines. So it's from 8 a.m. to 11. It's open to all kinds of makes, models of cars. And then the visitor center is open during the event, and then the museum itself opens at 10.
Yeah.
So you've got an opportunity to, really enjoy a lot of different things. You got to be a little careful going in and out, cars going back and forth. But it's really grown, and we're excited to get it started again this year. Yeah,
that is a good, just with that, that as a backdrop. It just makes sense to have something.
Yeah, a lot
like
of times
there.
these events will occur in parking lots, at shopping centers and things like that. And we've one of the great things we do have is ample room for cars. So
well, and one of the things, and to bring those, the people that go to those kinds of things, you're right there. The great thing, and it took me getting to go to, I had been here a long time before I had actually gone over to Gary Melcher's home and studio. It's the kind of thing you know about and you think, I ought to go there. And once you go there, you think, why haven't I been here before? Because
why indeed?
It's a good spot. our mutual friend MC Morris saw to it that I got there because I made the mistake of saying, I've never been there. I don't even know how to get there. And she made sure I got there. And since then, I've been hooked.
Well, and that's what so many people say. And you're right, including people who
live
here a long time.
Here, yeah.
We are a very popular spot over there, Gary Melcher's, for prom photography.
I've seen
And
people,
this is the season. And we've had, sometimes this past Saturday, four schools in the area had their proms on the same night.
Mm-hmm.
From Spotsylvania to Stafford, it was a couple of jurisdictions. And we had, by 4 p.m., we had a full parking lot and some 230 people coming out for the prom photography. And thanks to the UMW police for helping us manage that crowd, and that by 4:55, they were all gone. So we've got it down to quite a science to get people in, get people out. But over and over and over from the parents, I would hear, I've lived here all my life. I've never been here. All right, we never were quite sure what went on here, whatever. And, we're coming back. And that's why we do it. We're providing a service to the kids, but also It's in our interest, we hope, to see that exposure, you know.
And lest you think it's just about Gary Melcher, so there's other history there. One of the great Park Service programs, the History at Sunset program a few years ago, you and John Hennessy did a program there talking about Belmont during the Civil War. It was fascinating and played a big part.
That's so kind of you to put me on an equal footing with our friend John Hennessy, because it was more like 90-10 his favor.
Yeah, but
content.
See, I remember yours more. I couldn't tell you about.
Well, I stood up on the steps.
You talked about this railing that I thought that you, it was one of the things that you, during your time there, you got the railing redone.
Yeah, that was right. We were in the midst of that. Yeah, the horseshoe staircase, its restoration, that wonderful wrought iron railing. But yeah, the Falmouth's history yeah. as a port, certainly in the 18th century, its subsequent reliance on the steamboat traffic that would come up and down the river, and then its role in the Civil War, particularly. In those early days, in 1862, April of 62, the skirmish there, John's famous Battle of Arby's, that occurred on what's now Route 17, but yeah. also the occupation by Union troops, the role that put Joseph Burl Ficklin in, the owner of the property at the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
John Gibbon, who would go on to great fame as the commander of the Union Army's Iron Brigade, was encamped there and developed actually a friendship with the Ficklins. And so... there are a lot of different stories there. The story of the enslaved, both there and elsewhere. Moncure Conway's role in, you know, promoting abolition, and John Washington setting out on his journey. Falmouth's sort of at the epicenter of all.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Battle of Arby's, though.
The Battle of Arby's.
I need to focus more on that. That's one that has gotten
the
by.
The only
me.
Thing you can reference for that site is the Arby's, because nothing from the period is there. That's right.
But the fact that everybody, I think when you said that, I think everybody can picture it. Everybody knows what you're talking about. So,
and it's not a fight over the last beef and cheddar.
Right. So the other thing, the bookstore there, that has all the Gary Melcher stuff, also serves as the Stafford County Visitor Center.
Right. It is the Visitor Center and bookstore both. You know, it's the Visitor Center for Gary Melcher's, but you're right, for quite a while now. And you can go back to we referenced M.C. Morris earlier. She was the one, when she was County Tourism Director, that helped make that happen. And we've continued to provide that service for Stafford County as their Visitor Center. And
there's a free little library there that I find one of the best in the area.
Oh,
I'm always getting a book from there.
Yeah, in fact, we've had such donations to it that we've got far more than the little free library holds inside the Visitor Center.
We've got an extension
of it. Yeah, it's just, you know, we refer people into another part of the Visitor Center if, you know, they see what's out there, but we've got so much more. We'd have to build like five little free libraries all over the property just to hold them all. So it is, again, community service right there.
Yeah, yeah. Anything else that we've missed as far as anything else this summer you wanted to focus on with Belmont?
There's a great deal. I would encourage people go to GaryMelchers.org or JamesMonroeMuseum.umw.edu, the websites or the social media pages, Facebook especially, will give you lots of information on upcoming events. I've got... maybe next segment talk a bit about some of the James Monroe programs.
We are going to get to James Monroe.
I do want to mention, though, that at Gary Melcher's, talking about the 250th, we are also observing that at Gary Melcher's with an exhibit that is going on of Gary Melcher's mural studies. It is a chance to see some of the history. It's called History Paintings in Progress. It's some portraits Melchers did. There's studies of them for other places. One of General Nathaniel Greene, very key Revolutionary War general. Oliver Hazard Perry, the victor of Lake Champlain during the War of 1812. So we've got an exhibit there that ties in, as well as what we'll talk about at James Monroe.
So, yeah, again, a lot of the Virginia 250 events coming to Fredericksburg, as you can well imagine. And one of the other things that we've never talked in your time nearly enough is, and you frequently mention it, the papers of James Monroe.
Oh, yeah.
They're still alive and well.
In fact, much more than better than alive and well. We started last year in the spring, we were really concerned whether there would be a National Endowment for the Humanities with changes
right.
in this administration.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's been the principal funder of the papers really since its inception almost. Well, by the end of the year, we knew that there was a whole nother reality because five presidential papers projects received a special invitation, in large part tied to the American Revolution 250th, for a one-time $5 million grant opportunity that, in the case of the papers of James Monroe, would enable the project to finish, to be complete by 2031, the bicentennial of James Monroe's death. Talk about, you know, symmetry there.
Yeah.
And we were delighted to be able to announce early this year that, in fact, the papers did receive that funding. So Bob Karachuk, the editor, I was able to talk him off the ledge from where he'd I'd been right there with him, too. And it's a whole new revelation now that we've got four staff members are going to be hired, and all three of the final three volumes of the series, volumes 8, 9, and 10, will be worked on simultaneously. Mm. And it's not just a matter of advancing the project, but reaching the finish line. And it's just really exciting, very, very gratifying to see that possibility. And so, yeah, the papers of James Monroe were, and I'm not used to saying this usually, because it's always been so questionable and always tenuous. They are in good shape, and they see the way to the finish line.
So are these, when you reach the finish line and you get all this complete, to have these papers available in the future for historians is going to be a pretty big deal.
Yeah, and I'm going to clarify, too. It's not like that at, you know, James Monroe Museum or University of Mary Washington is not sitting on a massive archive or anything.
Yeah.
The Papers of James Monroe is a publication project. It looks at selected documents that are representative of his personal and private correspondence from his early years, the American Revolution, his early career, through, you know, the end of his career and life. It's not every single paper that relates to Monroe. Some presidential papers projects do that. It doesn't matter what it is, they're going to put it in. We can't afford, or nor do we feel the real necessity of doing that. So by comparison to some projects, it's smaller. But you've got, you know, research and publication of drafts of the Louisiana Purchase Treaty through the papers. You will see the correspondence behind and the efforts behind the Missouri Compromise and other state papers that really show Monroe's keen involvement in the thing, especially in his presidency. And the presidency is the next two volumes coming into publication.
Okay.
So these are bound published volumes, but they're also available online at Rotunda, the UVA Press's imprint. So yes, they're tools for historians. They are valuable for students, and they help put in an easily accessible location or locations the original documents in a transcribed, edited form, so you understand them better, you understand the context of them better.
Scott Harris here this morning as we talk UMW Museums, James Monroe Museum, and Belmont, Gary Melcher's home and studio, and the papers of James Monroe. We'll come back and talk about the James Monroe Museum and things coming up there when we return on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It's 8:31.
From the Fredericksburg FreePress.com studios, this is News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. You can weigh in about today's topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230 and by text at 540-371-5756. Here's your host, Ted Schubel.
Scott Harrison this morning, the executive director of UMW Museums, James Monroe Museum, Belmont, Gary Melcher's home and studios, and the papers of James Monroe. The James Monroe Museum, just the other night was, I missed the trivia night at the James Monroe Museum. I was sorry to do that because you were being honored.
Misplaced priorities, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
You're a good friend and husband, I'll just say that.
A baseball game called and I was not able to. I did want to come. I wanted to come late. If anything, trivia at the James Monroe Museum, up until trivia, I had always said, I'm pretty good at trivia. I know history, and I learned quickly with any kind of trivia at the James Monroe Museum. You really have to be at the top of your game.
Well, you know, we try not to make it. It's funny.
It's not too hard.
All the years,
no.
I've helped write a lot of those questions, and it's funny because the ones that I think, well, this will really stump people, oh, boom, they got it immediately. And the other ones I thought were sort of easy throwaways, I get, like, things thrown at me for them being too hard. It's like, you know, you can never predict. But yes, I had the honor of being the celebrity quiz master last Friday for history trivia. It helped kind of kick off the spring season out in the garden of the James Monroe Museum. And it was really just a wonderful affair. We had a nice, pretty much a capacity crowd in the garden, many familiar faces, and some very kind things said about me. But I also got to be the total czar in charge of all of the quizzes all the questions. So I had trivia from, I had Virginia trivia specifically. I had 1979 trivia because that's the year that I started at Mary Washington.
Yeah.
And I had one simply called Here Harris, There Harris, where other famous Harrises, not necessarily related to me, although the final answer was a noted authority on sports psychology from the University of Pennsylvania, Dorothy Dot Harris, who was related to me. She was my first cousin, so I ended on a family note with it, and it was just really wonderful and a great way to get things going in summer, programming season at the museum.
So what are some of the things that are going on at the museum?
Well, the family fair that we've been a part of on International Family Day the last few years is really developing nicely, and that's going to be May 30th. That's the next thing coming up. Again, they're in the garden of the James Monroe Museum from 10 a.m. to 3. We've got a lot of live craft demonstrations, free admission that day, hands-on activities for the whole family, so it's really just lovely. And then there are many other things. There's a nature journaling class that's on Saturday, June 6th, where you can record observations through drawing and writing and diagramming in a nature journal, and there'll be a master naturalist there to help guide you through that. As I mentioned earlier, James Monroe Museum is part of the big event at Ferry Farm on July 4th. That's 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Have a quilting workshop later in July, July 11th. Going on there, a perfume making class. So we're into a lot of the crafty things with some of these programs because they're trying to engage people. It's a history theme or history basis, but we want to develop some other kinds of things. Got another history trivia coming in September. We do not yet know the quizmaster. We're going to keep that as a surprise until later. That's because we don't know who it is yet. That's why it'll be a surprise to us too, or to them, I should say, because I will be out of the picture by that point. And there's a lot more. There's some great book talks coming in October, different talks about two titles, one called Revolutionary Things, about how everyday objects become tools of political expression during the American, French, and Haitian Revolution. So it's looking across the spectrum there. Great book called Coffee Nation. This will actually be both of these will be away from the museum. The Revolutionary Things book talk, which is October 22nd, will be over at Combs Hall on the university campus. And at Central Rappahannock Regional Library, Coffee Nation is basically a history of coffee, particularly as it related to the pre-revolutionary and post-revolutionary United States. It's just really a interesting way how coffee is a commodity, as a cultural thing. Became very defined with Americana. And then there's a lot more. The annual James Monroe Lecture is going to be in November. That will be on the main campus. It's going to be, again, revolutionary theme, revolutionary prophecies, the founders and America's future. It's going to be a great discussion there, two eminent historians, tea and trifle programs that we've done a lot with. We got one of those in December and the open house. So across the board, James Monroe Museum is very program-oriented, trying to do a lot of things to engage folks. And there are printed schedules around town in various places. You can get them at the museum, but you can also go on the website or the social media, and you'll be able to track those things. So
the museum itself there are great things in small packages when you talk about the James Monroe Museum, because it's not as big as some museums.
Small but mighty, I like to say.
You've got some really interesting things there. And Monroe himself is a fascinating person, whether his time as president or just the things that he was involved in. Because he was he the youngest of the founding fathers?
I mean, it depends on how you want to define it. He's considered by some the last of the founding fathers.
Okay.
They didn't line them all up and take a role or anything, but he certainly was on the younger side. I mean, he was a soldier in the Revolutionary War, but he went in when he was like 17 years old.
Yeah.
So, he's excuse me. He's stepping right up, serving as future country. Taking a bullet literally, as we've said many times on this show, at Trenton, the Battle of Trenton, mm-hmm. It's a musket ball from some anonymous Hessian that stayed in his body the rest of his life. One of my wife's ancestors was a Hessian mercenary. He was conscripted, and he was at the Battle of Trenton. He was captured. And I like to think that
wouldn't
maybe
that
he was the one that wounded James Monroe.
Yeah. Wouldn't that have been a great story?
I would
story?
Win a family argument if I said, well, look what your ancestor. Anyway, we don't go there. However, it is a very real and personal part of the story to look at how he was so inspired by the American Revolution, by the experience of that, not just the fighting in the war, but the idea of what the Republic could mean. And that animated the rest of his career. So the exhibit that will open next month at James Monroe Museum, I think I've got it right, it's the 23rd of June, is going to look at the revolutionary legacy of Monroe. I mean, we talk about him and his service and what it meant all the time, so it's not like we have to add a bunch of stuff, but we are adding some things that aren't often seen. And it will be something that lets people see that it was an enduring experience for him, and it took him all the way through a 50-year public service career. So that's you know, the ability to magnify the story we tell all the time there to focus on the 250th.
Whoever posted this on the James Monroe Facebook page should get a large raise. Someone, okay. I think it was right around his birthday on the, was it April 28th?
Isn't April 28th.
Is mm-hmm. one of his birthdays. And the Facebook posting was about all of the different places you can go in Virginia that has ties to James Monroe. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. I had no idea. I mean, I knew a few to the west, a couple of the places that have kind of ties to Monroe. But went down to Hampton, went all around the state.
He was everywhere.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, I made the grave mistake to the Washington Post years ago of calling him the Forrest Gump of American history. And, you know, and I'm still perpetuating it, too, by bringing that up. But it is kind of true. He did seem to be around for so many of these things that happened at different periods. And within Virginia, there are a lot of things that you can see. Students at UMW in the museum exhibits lab class under Dr. Christina Terdine have completed a traveling exhibit on Oak Hill. We talk about places he was. That's the home that really realized what he wanted. And he lived in it near the end of his life and during his presidency. And so there is a special exhibit. We'll have it at James Monroe Museum eventually. It's going to go to some places in Northern Virginia. Obviously, we're waiting to see if the Commonwealth will accept the gift of Oak Hill to be a state park. They've had a couple of General Assembly sessions where, for various reasons, they have not taken that step yet. But we are hopeful. We're not, you know, lobbying or anything. But we're obviously interested in that. That would be a real jewel in the crown of Monroe site, certainly.
So as you get ready to retire from this phase, and although you're retiring, you still are going to be around with Great Lives, and
the Great Lives lecture series
that will take up some time.
I've gotten involved in that the last couple of years from my former advisor and mentor, Dr. William B. Crawley, who founded the series. He's the namesake of it now, and we'll be in our 24th year. And Great Lives is the largest and longest running public program at the university. It's been a great course in history, and we're trying to get that revived. We had students this year, and we hope we'll continue that. But it's an opportunity to look at, you know, we talk about biography as history's human heartbeat, and that is the way that we hope it engages people, that people like to hear stories of other people.
Yeah.
And when you can do so in a way that's you know, well researched, it's a good context. And we look for as much variety as possible with the lectures, from topics that you would regularly see in a history book or some that you might see in a, you know, a popular magazine. People who have an impact in various ways on our history and our culture. And that's one of the strengths of the program, is its variety. And the uniting theme is biography, is looking how a life impacts the world around it. And so, that's going to be my retirement job, and looking forward to it. We're already working on the 2027 season.
I was going to ask you, I wondered, is the 27 season finished, or are you already working on 28,
No.
So you're still working
No, we're still working on that. I mean, it's always kind of ongoing, but we're really starting to kick into higher gear and looking and talking to authors, engaging with them about it. And it'll take several months to work out, and we'll have a reveal reception, as we always do, in November. Mm-hmm. So we're getting that together now. But I do hope that you know, as we go forward, people will come by. We'll enjoy Tuesdays and Thursday nights at the January through March period when we're doing those. You can see our archive lectures on the website, Great Lives, on the UMW website, and see going back to, I think, about 2012. We don't have the full run of them, but
okay.
There's a lot of them archived by year on the website.
I'll have to go back. I mean, because I've learned so much about some topics. I remember, I mean, the Matthew Brady one to me was fascinating to learn about. I've seen all the pictures, but to learn about Matthew Brady, the Secretariat a couple of times.
Yeah, the favorite non-human topic of Dr. Crawley, doing Secretariat.
And that was fascinating. I ended up buying the book. The author of the really kind of changed some of the thinking about Ty Cobb. And I hadn't even heard of that book until Great Lives.
Yeah. So. Oh, no, we've had some wonderful and some of the presentations this year. You know, Mark Lee Gardner, who we brought back, he had done Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse last year. He did Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday, and not only delivered a great talk, but he brought out his banjo. He's an accomplished musician. He was playing music of the period, told the story behind Ghost Riders in the Sky, and then performed that. We had the jazz men, Duke Ellington, Louis Armstrong, Count Basie, and had some of our UMW faculty performing before that. Great talk on that. And we've hit a number of very impactful stories of people like Barbara Jordan, first black congresswoman from the South, and just a tremendous orator right around the Watergate period, very crucial to what the House was investigating. And that's just the way. We have sports figures from politics, culture. It's a great program. Looking forward to keeping it going.
For you to, when you look back at your career, it has to be very satisfying to have not only I look at, I mean, there are many others who've come out of the Mary Washington program and have been back in this area, and Darren was one of them. But for you,
classmate of mine,
right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. For you to be at the university, it has got to be just a wonderful. When you look at a career,
it is. I'll use the word. It's marvelous, both from the standpoint that it feels great, but also it is a marvel. I came to Mary Washington fall of 1979, August of 1979, expecting I was going to major in political science and get a quote-unquote government job. That was kind of the general sense. I didn't really know what I was doing. A lot of entering freshmen don't. And I discovered this historic preservation program. I was already very steeped in history, had grandparents and other family members that had inspired me, some teachers as well. I didn't necessarily think of it as a vocation. But both the history department, which really was a great launching pad, the history degree at that time at Mary Washington, and it can still be a launching pad not only into academia or research, but into the law, to other kinds of pursuits. But the historic preservation program, which was brand new at the time that I was a student, showed how you could take that interest and channel it into work with artifacts and museums or with archaeology, with architecture, even urban planning. So I was fortunate to be able to double major in those subjects and to really pour the foundation upon which my career would be built. And 40 years later, which has turned out to be, I've had the great privilege of working in the place where I was born and never wanted to leave, Virginia, whether it's Colonial Williamsburg or the Manassas Museum System, the New Market Battlefield. Did not expect to come back to Mary Washington necessarily, but I will have ended up working here longer than any other place in my career. 15 years.
It's been 15 years.
15 years, July 2011. So came as the director of the James Monroe Museum, and then when we did some reorganization, created the University Museums Division, I guess we could call it, became executive director of that, and it's been a wonderful thing. It's all I've ever wanted to do, and I've had a chance to do it, and back at where it started.
Best phone call I ever made. To reference our friend MC Morris, said my classmates.
It's a three for her today.
It is. Yeah. My classmates now at the James Monroe Museum. You ought to get to know him. And there was an event going on, and I thought it was that weekend. And I called it, and I said,
was it the Welsh Festival?
It was. It was. Mm-hmm. I called you up and I said, you want to do something wrong? And I thought, he's not going to. He's just going to.
Who is this guy?
Right. And you were like, sure, let's do it. And we recorded something, and it was great. And I thought, I got to get to know this guy.
Well, and much to your regret, you have.
I have.
here we are. At
various times in my career here, when things were plotted against me, you were the one who I gamed it. I never trusted when you were here
because an unindicted co-conspirator.
There were things going on that you knew about, and they always used you as the front person.
Yes, I was the Trojan horse, I guess, or something like that. I think we can both agree, though, that it's another Scott that maybe has the most famous or infamous to on your birthday be reading from 50 Shades of Grey on air. That was Scott Mayowski. That was not me.
That was Scott Mayowski. It was exactly. There are Scotts in my life. Quick break. We're going to wrap it up with Scott Harris this morning and UMW Museums will conclude when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, sponsored by Green Line Service Corp. Miss a part of the show? No problem. Just subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite podcast platform. And now, back to your host, Ted Schubel.
Scott Harrison this morning with UMW Museums. The final days of Scott Harris as he gets ready to...
We're back to that, are we? Okay, very good.
I wish I hadn't said that.
54 days for museum director Scott Harris, yes.
You just reminded me of one of the greatest events, and it's still a video that every once in a while I look back on with great fondness, and I have a kazoo still in my car from that day, and I've had several cars since that day. But you did on Flag Day.
Yeah, it was on. It was on the anniversary of the bicentennial of the Star Spangled Banner.
Yeah.
Right. And there was a nationwide program called Raise It Up that encouraged people all over the country, all over the world, if they wanted, I guess, to perform the Star Spangled Banner at the same time. I think it was noon on that day, in whatever way they wanted to. They could sing it, they could play it, or whatever. And we hit upon the idea. Okay, I hit upon the idea. I'll just claim it.
You should.
To do it with kazoos. And we had those little red and blue James Monroe branded kazoos on. And I forget, we had something like 50, 60 people who gathered in front of the James Monroe Museum, and it's on the YouTube channel of the James Monroe Museum if you want to watch it. And at the appointed hour, I'm confident we had the only kazoo band in the United States at that moment doing the Star Spangled Banner, and pretty well, I would like to say.
It was. I've got a video,
too. You were there. You were in. It's funny. Someone else was videoing, and they show you videoing, too.
Yes.
You're in it. And someone had a pizza that they'd gotten, and they stopped by just to join in, and then they went on home with their pizza. It was just great.
It was a great day.
All ages, all races. It was just lovely time, and it came off. You know, sometimes you envision something, and it doesn't necessarily... The final version doesn't. That from start to finish was exactly what I hoped it would be and what we wanted to accomplish. And it was a wonderful little moment in time, a little 2-minute period in a life that you look back on and just really be happy about.
People will see the kazoo in my car and will say, "What is this?" And I'll say, I couldn't remember when. I said, "This guy goes back years ago." And I tell the story. It was one of the more.
God, that was 12 years ago.
Yeah.
Can you believe that?
Right.
Wow.
It's one of the things that you always have done to try to make history fun.
I think it has to be. I think, you know, it's the old spoonful of sugar idea if you can get people to enjoy what they're doing and feel like they're involved with something and interacting with other people, they learn something almost without realizing it, you know, and it's the kind of thing that I believe that museums, especially community-based museums, are extremely good at, whether it's National Park Service, you know, whether it's, you know, very large institutions, very small ones. If you connect with people, if you find ways to relate what you're doing to the visitor's experience, and this is, you know, Freeman Tilden, who wrote the Bible of historical interpretation, principles of interpretation, like 60-some years ago. He had these principles that should be followed. It's still the basis of the Park Service. And one of them is, you know, do something within the experience of the visitor. And interpretation is provocation you want to provoke a reaction. You want to find a way for people to connect. So, yeah, it's a great thing to do.
Well, because Great Lives goes on, this isn't it for you. So you'll be in here much more. So it's not the final days.
The semi-final days. Yes.
Scott, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ted. Appreciate it.
That's it. See you in the morning.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Sponsored by Greenline Service Corp. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear the show anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on your favorite streaming platform. The Glenn Beck program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.